Hello and welcome back to another edition of Podcast from the Edge with me, Peter Bruce. As we speak earlier in the week, American and Russian foreign ministers and their respective teams are meeting in Saudi Arabia in what promises to be one of the most dramatic resets in global politics in decades. New US President Donald Trump has already spoken at length to Russia's Vladimir Putin and clearly signaled a renewal of ties broken through the Cold War, then briefly stabilized under Mikhail Gorbachev, and then ruined again by Putin's aggression in Ukraine in 2014 and 2022. Basically, Trump forgives him the invasions of Ukraine, and his rage is directed instead at Western European powers, whom he accuses of taking advantage of American military power and getting a free ride on defense. The amount of military hardware the Europeans buy from the US may well tell a different story, but Trump is on the warpath. He's going to change the world from Washington to LA, from Pretoria to Berlin. And when everything is happening too fast, it's best to find unexcitable and level-headed people to speak to. So I'm very relieved to have former COSATU leader and a former premier of Gauteng, Mbazima Shiloa, with me for this edition. And Mbazima, I think you've just been in Europe. Where were you? And were you able to get any sense of how Donald Trump's hurricane first 2 or 3 weeks of policy announcements and strategic switches is playing on the continent?
Yes, Peter, I was out in Switzerland. But you know, like here in South Africa, everywhere in the world, it is those of us who are on social media who seem to be living on the edge. The rest of the people are going about their own daily life. Obviously, they will be impacted on by the decisions that Trump and the rest of the leadership across the globe makes. But I don't think that's really their main focus. The main focus for the majority of people is how to go on with life, eke out a living, ensure improvement of life for themselves and for their children and future generations.
It's amazing, isn't it? Social media is such a bubble sometimes. It's always a good thing to be reminded of how tiny a percentage of humanity it represents. We'll come back to Europe and the post-war world, but let's start for a moment at home, where social media or not, where Trump, with a few sort of brief sweeps of his arm, has exposed so many divisions we've had in our sort of rainbow society. You know, we've had Afrikaner groups holding thank you Trump rallies at the American embassy. We've had President Cyril Ramaphosa insisting we will not be bullied by the Americans. We have the second biggest party in government of national unity, first opposing a new expropriation act and then defending it after direct and explicit threats from Trump, and now taking the entirety of the new act back to court again. We have the chairman of the ANC suggesting we begin some sort of nuclear relationship with Iran. It all seems so mad, Mbazima. I mean, how much trouble are we in?
Well, it also depends what we really try to follow. I think it's always important to remember that social media, it's an echo chamber. So one person says one thing, it's retweeted, it's repeated, and before you realize, it may become the big story for the day when it's not. I'll give you an example before I come back to your question. Joel, who I think is fencing himself to become the U.S. ambassador to South Africa, will tweet everything that comes through. But whenever it is retweeted, it is always said someone who is tipped to be the U.S. ambassador. If you were to ask by whom, nobody will tell you. But it is himself. It is himself who is tipping himself like that. Similarly, when you listen to Gwede Mantashe responding to what seems to have been a hypothetical question of whether you can do something with Iran or Russia, you may think that that's really what the government have decided. But if you were to look, including what Clayson have tweeted from Derco, we have had no relationship with Iran on the nuclear side from a long time ago. And I think me and you may remember the time when there were issues. Abdul Minti and others had to be sent there to try and ensure that Iran sticks to the letter and spirit thereof. So we've not been able to go back there. So we are in trouble, not because Trump is informed, not because of what AfriForum is saying. They may just be have given him a lightning rod. Trump is on a mission to fight everybody in favor of what he has called making America great again. So I know we think that, no, our battle with him has to do with what he says about Afrikaners. He knows that that's not true. It has to do with our stance on Palestine. It has to do with the perception that we are working with Iran. That's what it's all about. But at the same time, the funny part is that even as he would say, we're doing bad thing, talking to Russia, he himself is sitting down talking to Russia, which shows you that international affairs have got very little to do with logic, but has to do with what is known as country interest, but also depending on who the leader is. And finally, I know that many of us are freaked out with what he has said. And of course, if you receive the U.S. aid, you are in the space for health, you would be freaked out. But it's always important to remember that, important as that amount is, it's really a small fraction of our health budget, and that we don't receive any antiretrovirals or HIV medication from anybody in the world but ourselves. And finally, that we also freaked out because of what may happen to AGOA. I may be a lone voice. I have got no problem with us remaining in AGOA. And obviously, if it's possible, it should happen. But I've never worked on the assumption that this was going to be a permanent program. And I think we seem to be thinking that it should be a permanent program. If you look at it in reality, there are objective factors which objectively we don't meet in terms of the level of development where we are. So yes, we need them. And if it's going to be terminated, we need a bit of lead time. But at the same time, we must remember that AGOA is not about trading with the U.S. It's about free trade, if I may put it that way, in terms of accessing to the market. So it was important always, whether it will continue or not, to continue to create new markets, which you will need at any given point.
Yeah. I always remember former DTRC Minister Ibrahim Patel used to warn when it was becoming clear that continuing in AGOA might be at risk. He would say that we were at risk of being graduated out of AGOA into some higher form of trading partner. And in fact, you're right. You know, the actual amount of tax saving, the amount of tax we don't pay by virtue of AGOA is, I'm assured by people who really study this thing, no more than 2 billion rand, which if the US dollar were to appreciate against the rand, would almost wipe out the tax advantage anyway. So AGOA is not necessarily the beginning and end of it all, but nonetheless, some sort of action against South Africa, and rightly so, for Gaza and for our relationship with Iran, seems you can't walk away from it. I mean, It may well be that we find back channels to Trump, and the back channel may end up even being Vladimir Putin. But trying to find a way into speaking to Trump, as I'm sure Cyril Ramaphosa is doing, could sort of cause him even more trouble. Perhaps, you know, at home even, because the South African politics has been ruffled up quite badly by what has happened with Trump coming into the presidency.
Yes, but Peter, that's why I'm saying we shouldn't be caught in the headlights like, you know, a rabbit or a hare. Trump is dealing with every country in terms of trade and tariffs. For us, it happens to be AGOA, but, you know, he's taken a swipe at China. He has just issued an order, I think today or yesterday, that says that everybody that have tariffs on us, we are going to put tariffs. So the only point I'm making is, it's not that we should not talk to him, is that, but we should not think we are the exception to the rule. He is trying to angle with everybody. Having said that, of course, you know, even in times of war, you talk with everyone. The problem in the Trump issue and talking, I don't think is getting into Trump, is whether or not the people who are around Trump, Rubio, Musk, and others, would allow us to speak to. And my view have always been that, look, yes, we must send envoys everywhere, but I wouldn't send anybody to the U.S. until Rasool says yes, and that I've been able to secure meetings. Nothing will be more humiliating than going to the U.S., hoping that you're going to be meeting with Trump, only to be rebuffed. It may be that Rasool may say, look, you won't be able to meet with Trump. You won't be able to meet with those in government. But just like back in the days of the anti-apartheid struggle, I'll be able to arrange for you to meet with different representatives, different caucuses, who will be able to hold sway into it. So yes, we must talk to him, but I work on the assumption that it is not really talking to Trump. It's what Rubio and Musk are going to decide. And I think at the moment, for some strange reason, they seem to be holding out that they shouldn't be talking to us. But again, you know, everything is possible. I know that when he said 2 weeks ago that he is not coming to the G20 meeting of foreign ministers, the assumption would have been that the U.S. is not going to participate. But it may only mean that he is not going to be here. But the irony is, he's not going to be here as the foreign minister, but the Minister of Finance, or
The Treasury Secretary
is going to be here. So it must mean it is not a government position to boycott the G20 or not to get involved in G20. It may be that Rubio is playing some politics.
Nonetheless, the Americans are asking questions of both our domestic and our foreign policy. And I wondered whether you think we've got good people in government making decisions. Have we got the right people for this kind of challenge? You know, can other GNU partners perhaps help, or is foreign policy a purely ANC purview inside the government?
No. I mean, everybody has to do their bit. And I think I know that John is in a little bit of trouble for trying to explain, you know, what he understands of the act, which seems to be at odds with what the Minister of Public Works would have said. But I think it's because John understands that, you know...
Mbazima, I just want to say, by John, you're talking about John Steenhuisen, the leader of the Democratic Alliance and Agriculture Minister. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. But I think John would have understood that when you are inside a boat, if you poke holes in the hope that when the boat sinks, only the other side will sink, we're more likely to sink all of us. So I think there's a need for us to help. But there's also a need, I think, both in the media and for us who are in social media or in the public, to not make AfriForum a representative of white people and of Africana. Yep. These are remnants of what used to be the Conservative Party. If you look at their proposals on the way forward, they are no different from the ones that the Conservative Party would have put up in 1993 during the CODESA negotiations. You know, so yes, we must not ride roughshod over people in our country. It's important that we listen to what they have to say. But there are some things you can backpedal. I'll give you an example. I think it is fine for people to say, we have a problem with how BEE is being implemented, and that let's talk about it. I'm open for that kind of discussion because I think it can be tweaked where it has seemed to benefit only a few and all of that. But I think to seek to change what is in the Constitution that says there will and there must be redress, and to ask the ANC or anybody to walk away from that, it's asking too much, and it's not going to happen. Similarly, if you really look at this Expropriation Act, I know people make a meal out of it, but in reality, this act is no different from what Trump himself has there, what is in Canada, what is everywhere. It's simply that it's being hyped here as if there is some decision that will say, let's take property. You're not going to have property taken willy-nilly, Peter. The majority of those in leadership, in government, across the political parties, including MKP and in the EFF and the ANC, these are the middle class. They have property. And I don't think any one of them would want their property taken away from them willy-nilly. So it's just not going to happen. What is going to happen is that a number of properties in the various CBDs that have been abandoned, that people can't be found, those are likely to be taken. There may be one or two farms which have been abandoned, but in which, after due process, it may be felt this can be taken away. That's really all you're going to have. You're not going to have a wholesale expropriation of land. Not now, not in the future.
And yet it's obviously for some parties, and AfriForum is not a party, but it's a civic group, that narrative suits their purpose. And so being, you know, like politics all around the world, some people will pick it up and run with it in one direction, and some people will pick it up and run with it in another. Given that there is a sense of crisis, and I don't think it's solely created on social media. The threat from the Americans is real, and they could do enormous damage to just being a South African if they chose to. You know, imagine not being able to use your credit card or whatever it might be. I mean, it probably won't come to that, but, you know, a vengeful America is not something you want to necessarily live with. And I just wanted to ask you whether, given the situation that we're in, if it was up to you and you had the power to make it so, what would you be doing to make the best of it, this crisis? I mean, it's a moment. How do we come out of it stronger rather than, you know, how do we come out of it stronger?
Other than maintaining channels to talk, there's very little that I think we can be able to do. However, having said this, I think it would be ironic if it was the U.S. which would drive the ANC and the GNU to do more trade with China, Russia, Brazil, and other BRICS people. I would have thought that given their anti-communist rhetoric, they would want to ensure that you don't willy-nilly drive the ANC in particular into an anti-American situation. So yes, it will hurt us. But if it happens because there was just very little we can do, I think America itself would lose out. Let me give you an example. Sure, you may be saying, imagine not being able to use the card. But I am sure that, you know, it may have to do with American visa cards and all of that. But I'm sure the rest of Europe, people will be able to utilize those. But for me, that's not really even the issue. The issue is, does America, in what it does, seek to drive a wedge between it and Europe, it and China, cozy up to Russia, but in the same process, you know, if you can't leverage South Africa, let's say, for instance, they were to say, we're taking away AGOA. What else do you have to take away from them? You know, when you've got nuclear or a bomb in your hand, you can only detonate it once. Once you detonate it, there's very little you can do. So I'm hoping that in the various discussions that will happen, even as there's very little we can give them, we'll be able to give them reassurance that, look, just as there has never been, you know, wholesale thing about the land, it's not going to happen. I think the thing about relationship with Iran, we all know that there's no relationship with Iran. It's like somebody accusing you of being in an affair with someone that you really don't have. It's very difficult to convince them otherwise, you know, if it's not there. With regard to the whole issue of Palestine, my own personal view is that there's very little that the ANC can do. It's not so much about the relationship. It's also about, if the case is already in front of the ICJ and you as the US believe in the rule of law, surely you would believe that the courts is not going to rule in favor of South Africa unless Israel has a case to be able to answer. And you can't have what is arguably said to be the best democracy that articulate for rule of law, saying that, no, look, we prefer everything being moved out of there. That, but also, I don't think anyone in the ANC would really agree that, I know people will say, you know, it's too far away from us. But, you know, it's too far away from us. It's also very important. To simply say, remember, Trump now says he is going to take over Gaza. He will ship out the people out of Gaza into Egypt, Jordan, and all of that. And I think that is more dangerous than really South Africa going through normal law channels to try and deal with these things. So a short answer is that I would continue to talk in the hope that sense will prevail. But I would also, looking at his current order on tariffs, start preparing ourselves that it won't just be because of AGOA. It's because he's on a rampage to say, we, those people who don't pay tax our way, we must also not be paying tax their way.
I mean, this injunction, I think he brought out today, the fair and reciprocal plan, he calls it, on trade, is going to, so whatever, we have an enormous, if you take it on a sort of trade weighted basis, an enormous surplus with the United States, because they buy more things from us than we buy from them. And we will take a hit, and especially our car industry threatens to take a hit, including American companies like Ford, who make buckies and vehicles here. And Trump would argue, why aren't you making them in America and exporting them there? So yes, there is going to be some damage there. And I think Ebrahim Rasool, you were talking about him earlier on, the return ambassador to South African ambassador to Washington, is really going to have his work cut out for him. And I really hope, Mbazima, that we have good trade people in the embassy there, because they're going to have to do a lot of talking and they're going to have to make some connections pretty quickly, well out of the normal range, I would suspect, of a South African diplomat in America up until now. But
yes,
let's look a little more globally.
I think that's really where I was going. I was saying, I agree with everything you say. The only thing I'm always trying to emphasize, we must not feel like Trump is singling us out. Trump is fighting everybody. He is more closer to Europe, but he's basically said to Europe, we will do as we wish. Bugger the North Atlantic treaty we have. Bugger what Bush and Blair would always say, were joined in the heap. He's basically saying, look, I will do as I wish in those areas. And if someone can't listen to people who are much closer to him, who having taken Israel to the ICJ, who are not having any cozy relationship, assuming we were having with Iran, it tells you that he's not singling us out, he's singling out everybody. It will only be later that he'll realize his folly. I mean, the courts have got their hands full now. It's like our Zuma era, when really everything had to end up in the Constitutional Court.
It is amazing how confident, I mean, and I'm talking about myself already, but I'm of a certain age, and how confident I feel that this can't end well for Trump. I mean, you can't treat your allies the way Trump is treating his allies and expect nothing to go wrong eventually. It would be quite astonishing. But just to look at what he's doing globally, clearly the balance of power will begin to change in the world. He wants to change the balance of power. And you have his vice president, J.D. Vance, saying some truly shocking things to the Europeans at the Munich conference the other day. But, you have to ask yourself, should the Europeans have been shocked? Surely being shocked is like the Democrats, because like the Democrats, they just couldn't imagine Trump ever winning. They wrote him off. Now that he has, and he's a truly, a truly right-wing, fake libertarian world begins to be imaginable. I mean, I say fake because these are people who see themselves in grand power terms, and they're unlikely to take kindly to being challenged. But the balance of power changes, and we need to find a place in a new world, perhaps.
Yes, we should. But I don't think that they didn't expect him to win. Is that I think nobody expected him to be that rampant. People expected that, look, Trump is still going to be Trump. But I think people thought that, look, the system will be able to temper him. Because the assumption is that you've got a bureaucracy that has been there from the time of Ronald Reagan, George Bush, and all of that, who will always be able to say, guys, never mind what you view as. There's a level to which you can do things. I mean, let me give you an example of why Europe could never have prepared for it. Take this example. You don't, if you're going to negotiate, say with someone, not what your bottom lines are, but simply that, look, I'm willing to give him anything that that he wants in order to secure peace. That is never a way to negotiate. And then he says, I don't think the Europe could ever have anticipated where someone will say, I will do a peace deal, but then you will have to put soldiers to do the peacekeeping, but I am not going to do any of those sort of things. So, sure, people may have underestimated him, but I don't think that's what we thought. But linked to that also is that, remember, Europe is also fighting its own battles of right-wing extremism. The German government have just fallen. There's going to be elections, I think, in a week or so. And knowing Germany, it's going to be more of the same. You know, Macron is in trouble, regardless of what bravado is there. It may be that Le Pen won't be able to come in, but they will be able to control parliament. So even as they're fighting Trump, they also have to look inside at themselves to say, but how do we fight Trump without falling into the hands of the extremists who agree with his views, by the way, on migration, you know, South Africa first and all of those things, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, the ANC, I was just thinking, I mean, the ANC might even be able to find a place for itself in this new world. I mean, so Zuma, I remember, clearly remember, because I was in the room when he did it, he defended the Russian invasion of Crimea in 2014. He said it was that Putin had a right to a sphere of influence. Russia had a right to its own sphere of influence. And Ramaphosa has also clearly defended the Russian invasion of eastern Ukraine. He blamed it on NATO expanding. Which is a Putin talking point. So, I mean, we may very well be able to find that, you know, we just simply have to pick our sphere of influence. Which one do we want to be in, and get comfortable in? I mean, you know, which one would you choose? You've got China, Russia, and America. Where do we go? We can't have it all.
We can always have it all. I think the notion that you either are with America or Russia and China is where I think the DA got it wrong, for instance. Because, sure, in reality, it came across like, as a country, we were on the side of Russia. But remember, Ramaphosa have always been trying to talk to both sides. You may say he was winking at the other side, but more inclined with the other, granted. But the point is, even at that point, America would have said, no, you can't be talking to Russia. They would have said, Russia can't be talking to China. But as you sit now, you know, it's not so much that we will say we were right. It's more that it's important that we say to the U.S., you remain an important trading partner, which is why there are 600 or odd companies of yours in our country. We want to keep that relationship. There are also other things that America shouldn't just simply walk away from, because even though Guedes just shoot his mouth off, but you've got to bear in mind that we had an agreement between us and the U.S. on nuclear, what to do, how to prevent it falling in this and that hand. So you can't say, we won't talk to you about AGOA, but we want to talk to you about nuclear. So I think once all of these things have died down, you know, I'm sure we'll be able to move forward. I don't think those involved in trade, even though they may not like the balance of trade between us and the U.S., they would want to lose a situation in which altogether you're not going to go that way. In any case, the people most likely to be impacted upon if America was to act, of course, it's going to be the poor. Of course, it's going to be everybody. But, you know, let's say they say no, sanctions in terms of travel, you're not going to be getting 10-year visas and all of that. It's not Joe Soap from my village that is going to be impacted upon. It's going to be the very same people who currently say we stand with this Krill and others, which is why we need to distinguish. AfriForum has got no interest about the country. They've got no interest of the Afrikaners. They've got an interest of a few lunatic on their side. In the same way, it's important that the ANC, the Government of National Unity, does not make what AfriForum say the totality of what you know, whites and Afrikaners think. You know, I mean, inside the ANC, you will have people that will say, "We don't care. America can go to hell." Of course, the ANC as a whole can never say that, because people understand that it's a global world. You've got to work with everybody. Sanctions themselves, you know, will not be good for us. But that's what America thought it will be for the for Russia. I'm not saying that Russia is booming, but I don't think it is on its knees the way America had thought. If we go to sanctions this or that way, we're going to bring them into, you know, into the bottom.
Europe, nonetheless, Mbazima, seems alone. I mean, do you think, and, you know, you probably know the Russians better than I do because you've had an opportunity in your political life. Do Eastern Europeans have a reason to worry about Russia? I mean, would Putin seriously now, if he gets away with having invaded Ukraine, would he look at, you know, Lithuania or Estonia and think, well, I can have a piece of you too? I mean, if Trump pulls away and walks away, are those countries vulnerable, or does the rest of the world stand up and defend them? Just a general sort of view from some.
In theory, everything is possible, but I don't think that that's where Putin is more likely to go. You know, I think his key mission of securing a major chunk of Ukraine having been achieved, I'm sure he's going to sit back, rejoice. I said in one of my axes, I think that the Russians are drinking vodka by the dozens in the streets, listening to what Trump have to say. So yes, Europe should be worried, but so should be Taiwan if you follow that route. Because if Trump is willing to turn a blind eye to what happens in Ukraine, what makes people think that he's more likely to be defending Taiwan? This is someone who is willing to take, you know, Greenpeace, who is willing, Green Island, is somebody who would want to incorporate Canada into his thing, who think, you know, the Gulf of Mexico should be the Gulf of America. So you just don't know what you're dealing with. You know, it's, for me, it's a really good example of the lunatics being in charge of the sanatorium.
Asylum.
You know? Asylum. We just have to be ready for ourselves.
Do you think, Mbazima, there's any comfort in the fact that the U.S. holds midterm elections at the end of next year? I mean, it's suddenly end of next year suddenly feels like a very long way away. But if the Democrats were somehow miraculously to win even tiny majorities in the House or the Senate, they could really put the brakes on a lot of what Trump is doing.
I don't know if they can win, but if they were to win, it will break down. But remember, Trump is really not following any script. He's not following any law. I think for him, the law doesn't really matter. The law is a hindrance, and he will always seek to work outside of it. The only thing that can happen is if they were to have a majority, say, in Congress, it will be possible for them to stop some of the things and that everything won't end up in there. But my starting point is that you've got to look at Trump not as someone who believes in the rule of law. He believes in Trump rules, and that if they don't work, you find another way of making them work. He's one of those people like P.W. Botha would do to say, guys, this is what we want to be done. You say, you know, it can't be done. He says, well, bend the law or find the law in which these things could be done, even if it means undermining the judiciary.
So that's a good comparison with P.W. Botha. I hadn't thought of it. There were other comparisons, but P.W. is right. I mean, people get to the point where they where they become unpredictable, and unpredictability is not a good thing necessarily in leadership. Last question, Mbazima. If you were a young Afrikaner now, would you take up Trump's offer of refugee status in America? I mean, there's a green card. You're a young person, white Afrikaner.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. Also, because as a young Afrikaner, I would be educated enough to be able to read in between the lines. Trump is not offering refugee status. Now, that is what he says. In reality, if you look at the laws and the executive orders he has passed on refugees, it is to stop everything. And I don't think he's going to make any exception. It will simply have many Afrikaners hyped up. So if it's really not going to... No, if I was a young Afrikaner, I would not take it. In reality, they even having it better here.
We'll leave it there. Mbazima Shalowa, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And I hope you've enjoyed listening. I'll be back with another edition of Podcast from the Edge next week. So please join me again then. In the meantime, bye-bye and take care.